I felt so hopelessly evil and perverted. Never understood it. There was no use trying to fight it because I couldn't rid myself of it. It was too powerful and persistent.
All right. For you, it's been a full 7 days. For us, it's been a full 7 minutes.
Just about, yeah.
Yeah. Welcome back to Crime and the Coconut. I'm Ashley.
I'm Amanda.
We never actually say our names, but you guys know who we are, I hope. If you don't, we're Ashley and Amanda. We have been talking about good old Jeffy D, Jeffrey Dahmer. When we last left you, he had just been apprehended by police. So today, we're going to talk about what the police found and how Dahmer was sentenced and handled in prison, everything leading up to his subsequent death.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
All right, so they apprehend him. He says, "For what I did, I should be dead." They begin their detailed search of the apartment. It was conducted by Milwaukee's Police Criminal Investigation Bureau. It revealed a total of 4 severed heads in Dahmer's kitchen, a total of 7 skulls, some painted, some bleached. They were found in Dahmer's bedroom and inside a closet. In addition, investigators discovered collected blood drippings upon a tray at the bottom of Dahmer's refrigerator. So that thing that collects the water, it was just collecting blood.
Oh, to see without my eyes, I'm sure is what these boys are thinking of.
Also, 2 human hearts and a portion of an arm muscle, each wrapped inside plastic bags on the shelves. In Dahmer's freezer, investigators found an entire torso plus a bag of human organs and flesh stuck to the ice at the bottom. Elsewhere in the apartment, investigators found 2 entire skeletons, a pair of severed hands, 2 severed and preserved penises, a mummified scalp, and in the 57-gallon drum, 3 further dismembered torsos dissolving in the acid solution. A total of 74 Polaroid pictures detailing the dismemberment of Dahmer's victims were found in reference to the recovery of body parts and artifacts at 924 North 25th Street. The chief medical examiner later stated it was more like dismantling someone's museum than a crime scene. He was so methodical and calculated and clean for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like he had some kind of, like, human bodily part in almost every room of his place.
Right, and I mean, his apartment probably wasn't that big, but he killed 17 people, and most of them were still in his apartment.
And even, like, you said that he had those, like, vats in his bedroom. Like, he slept with those bodies.
And a 57-gallon drum is huge. He fit 3 torsos in there. 3 people. 3 men in that gallon drum. That's huge.
My expression is filled with disappointment.
Yeah, she just... I mean, she knew it wasn't going to be good, but I don't think she was ready for this. So we're going to talk about his confession now. The early hours of July 23rd, which is the next day, Dahmer was questioned by Detective Patrick Kennedy as to the murders he had committed and the evidence they found.
How do you even start that?
Yeah, what do you... just tell me. Because I just let me have it. Why?
Right. I'd be like, yeah. So.
Who even are these people? Because most of them, again, some of them weren't even reported missing. People just didn't even know they were gone.
You just push some pictures and you're like, so.
Just let me know.
Did you do this? It's a yes or no question. Did you do just this?
Let me know. Take your time.
Yeah.
Over the following 2 weeks, Kennedy and later Detective Patrick Murphy conducted numerous interviews with Dahmer, in which, when combined, totaled over 60 hours. So if you thought our last episode was long, that ain't shit. Dahmer waived his right to have a lawyer present throughout the interrogation, adding that he wished to confess all as he had created this horror, and it only makes sense that I do everything to put an end to it. He readily admitted to having murdered 16 young men in Wisconsin since 1987, with 1 further victim, Stephen Hicks, killed in Ohio in 1978.
I mean, at least he made it easy.
Yeah.
Like, he could have totally been like, nope, didn't do it.
Oh, it irritates.
And added so many extra steps.
It irritates my fucking soul when serial killers are like, yep, let me tell you X, Y, and Z, but A, B, C, D, E, you don't get any of that from me, sorry. Figure it out yourselves. Most of Dahmer's victims had been rendered unconscious prior to their murder, although some had died as a result of having acid or boiling water injected into their brain. As he had no memory of the murder of Tuomi, the one that woke up with the crushed chest, his second murder, he was unsure whether he was unconscious when beaten to death, although he did concede it was possible that his viewing the exposed chest of Tuomi while in a drunken stupor may have led to him unsuccessfully attempting to tear Tuomi's heart from his chest.
See, I think that's really weird.
It is.
That he killed that first guy, totally remembers every single bit of it.
And then kills Tuomi and has no recollection.
Yeah, and just doesn't know. But then goes on to kill more people and remembers everything about it. Like, what was so specific about that second guy that made him not be able to remember it?
We've kind of decided that we both kind of think that he was born this way, or at least in some of him was like this as he came out.
Mm.
I think that whatever was in him that inherently led him to want these things was kind of not dormant, but it was not dominant in him. And Tuomi's murder is what made it dominant.
Yeah, but you think that, like, his whole attitude would have changed. But, you know, you have, like, say, like, you have Jeffrey Dahmer A and Jeffrey Dahmer B.
Mm-hmm.
Jeffrey Dahmer A was there with the first murder, and Jeffrey Dahmer A was there on all the other murders. But
right.
For some reason, somehow,
Jeffrey Dahmer B killed Tuomi.
Yeah, and then it never came back out again.
Yeah.
Like, which is so weird. And it's not like he wasn't used to being an alcoholic.
Right. And personally, to me, I mean, the murder is murder, and it's terrible, and the fact that his chest was so beat in, it looks like he had attempted to rip his heart out, that's terrible. But to me, that's way less graphic than dismembering bodies in the way that he dismembered bodies. So for him to possibly compartmentalize Tuomi's murder and not remember it because he doesn't want to remember it is strange to me.
Right.
Because it was one of the lesser
murders. I think there's a deeper, like, personal, maybe like a self-hatred that goes with that second one.
Maybe. It's
versus all the other ones, it was more of like, I'm doing this for my own pleasure kind of
thing. And maybe that's when he realized it.
Yeah.
I lost my spot. Most of Dahmer's victims had been rendered unconscious, like I said. All the murders that Dahmer committed after moving into the Oxford apartments had involved a ritual of posing the victims' bodies in suggestive positions, typically with the chest thrust outwards prior to dismemberment. So I'm going to kind of try to show Amanda this. They were basically like, almost like a back bend.
Well, yeah, they had the shoulders back.
Yes, but they were dead bodies and they were usually dismembered. So it was really grotesque to see them like that. It wasn't like the sexy pose that it typically is.
Well, it was probably sexy to him.
Right.
Yeah.
But I found that this is actually, they think this may have come from another serial killer who used to do the same thing with the bodies of his victims. And he would photograph them the same way.
Who was this guy?
I don't remember his name.
Such
a terrible true crime podcast host. Dahmer readily admitted to engaging in necrophilia with several of the victims' bodies, including performing sexual acts with their viscera as he dismembered their bodies in his bathtub. He noted that much of the blood pooled inside his victim's chest after death. Dahmer first removed their internal organs and then suspended the torso so the blood drained into his bathtub. I would just like to note, I don't know if I put this in here later on, Dahmer would shower with bodies in his bathtub because it took so long to do what he did to them and he needed to shower to go to work. You're welcome.
Just visualizing that. Like, you have to go to Home Depot, get those fucking heavy-duty hooks. And then be like, well, I have to take a shower, but I got these big old bodies in here.
So you would just shower with them in there.
I'm just going to squeeze in next to them and then go about my day like nothing happened.
And this is a small apartment shower. This is not like a two-person, big, mighty shower. So he would let the blood drain and before dicing any organs that he did not want to keep, parting the flesh from the body. The bones he wished to dispose of were pulverized or acidified with the Soilex and bleach solutions used to aid in his preservation of the skeletons and skulls that he did wish to keep. In addition, he confessed to having consumed the hearts, livers, biceps, and portions of thighs of several victims killed within the previous year. Describing the increase in his rate of killing in the 2 months prior to his arrest, Dahmer stated that he had been completely swept along with his compulsion to kill. He said it was an incessant and never-ending desire to be with someone at whatever cost, someone good-looking, really nice-looking. It just filled my thoughts all day long. When asked why he preserved a total of 7 skulls and the entire skeletons of 2 victims, Dahmer stated that he had been in the process of constructing a private altar of victim skulls, which he had intended to display on a black table located in his living room, and upon which he had photographed the bodies of many of his victims. So I watched a, it's called Dark Tourist. I don't know if you've ever.
Yes.
Oh, that show's so good.
Yeah.
But Dahmer. The guy goes to Wisconsin and goes on a Dahmer tour with like one of the biggest Jeffrey Dahmer fans there is.
Mm.
And they actually meet with Dahmer's lawyer, like one of his lawyers.
I don't think I actually saw the episode. I might have purposely skipped it.
It's very good because the lawyer shows actually the sketch that Dahmer made of this altar. And it's fucking spooky. But people asked him, was this a shrine to your victims so you could remember them? Because he was always saying, you know, I want to keep them with me. He said, no, it was a shrine to me. It was a shrine for me to sit in front of and masturbate to remember what I had done. This display of skulls was to be adorned at each side with a complete skeleton of Miller and Lacey. The 4 severed heads found in his kitchen were to be removed of all flesh and used in this altar as well, as was the skull of at least 1 future victim. Incense sticks were to be placed at each end of the black table, above which Dahmer intended to place a large blue lamp with extending blue globe lights. So like one of those lamps with a bunch of different lamps mm-hmm. on it. The entire construction was to be placed before a window covered with a black shower curtain, in front of which Dahmer intended to sit in a black leather chair. When asked in 91 who the altar was dedicated to, he said, myself. It was a place where I could feel at home. He further described his intended altar as a place for meditation from where he believed he could draw a sense of power, adding, if this, his arrest, had happened 6 months later, that's what they would have found.
You know, I do have to really, like, appreciate the honesty.
He's like, yep.
Because I think that also goes hand in hand with a lot of people that do shit like this. They do it so they can be immortalized.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew. He was like, this is going to be immortalized. Nobody else has done something like this.
Or if they have, they haven't been caught.
2 young adults in their 20s.
We'll be talking about this
with
later.
With pink hair, are going to be doing something called a podcast about it. Right. And I want it to be accurate.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of my my in-laws, I love him to death, JP from Use Guys and that podcast. He actually got me into podcasting. We were talking. We had a cookout a couple weeks ago. And he said, I don't understand. You know, why do people like this? Why do people like true crime? And my older sister, his wife, likes it too, and she's interested in it. And I tried to explain to him, and you know, everybody's different, but I said, it's not that I like hearing about how Jeffrey Dahmer cut up a bunch of men and ate them and, you know, took them from their families and did horrible, awful things to them. I don't like that. And if I could know the story without knowing that, I absolutely would. What I find interesting and what I think is important is there were people that knew Jeffrey Dahmer and knew he was a weird guy, knew he wasn't, you know, necessarily normal,
mm-hmm.
but never would they have ever said that this was who he really was. He had a neighbor in the Dahmer on Dahmer documentary that I watched for some of this research. His neighbor lived across the hall. She was a sweet black woman. And she said, I had no idea. She said, my husband and I were trying to get him a girlfriend. She said he was the nicest person I had ever known. Nobody knew.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody had any inkling, any idea. He got away with it for like years. So I think it's important to talk about these things so that way you can be aware of your surroundings and not so trusting of people. That's not me saying like don't trust anybody, but anybody can be like this.
Oh yeah, you never know. Like you really don't know how people are. Neighbor downstairs, I'm not gonna say any names.
I saw her on the way in.
Yeah. She lived by herself with her cats, and we made small talk a couple times. And she told my boyfriend at the time that her sister had died or something like that. And I felt bad, so I was like, you know, I'm gonna get her a card that said, you know, my condolences, and I put my phone number in, and I got her flowers, and I was like, you know, no pressure, but if you ever want to talk, like, I'm your neighbor and I'm here.
Right.
And months went by, and she took me up on that offer, and it turns out she's fucking nuts. She's crazy. And I like went to go leave, and she was like a 40 plus year old woman is like, you're leaving me, and like crying, and I'm like, oh my god, bitch, I hardly know you.
Right.
And I was telling Ashley about this story a couple months after that, and we're walking past my apartment, and she goes, did you see that? I'm like, see what? And she's like, there's a broken heart drawn into the dirty glass on her balcony. And I was like, lock the fucking door.
You just don't know. You don't know how, what someone is capable of. And sometimes they don't even know it.
Yeah. You know? I'm not trusting anybody. Exactly. Fuck that.
So that's why I like, quote unquote, like serial killers. Because it's just like when you read about a war. You don't read about the war because you want to hear about the hundreds of thousands of men and women that died. Men and women and children. You want to hear about why the war happened so you can avoid it in the future.
Right.
Same thing. So his indictment to follow was July 25th. He was charged with 4 counts of first-degree murder. And by August 22nd, he had been charged with a further 11 murders committed in Wisconsin. On September 14th, investigators in Ohio, having covered hundreds of bone fragments in the woodland areas behind the Bath, Ohio address.
I would have been pissed off if I was that fucking, like, I don't know, architect, or no, architect.
Archaeologist,
whatever, I don't
Forensic
know.
Forensic anthropologist, maybe.
Whoever
whatever.
Does that work. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, we're going to find some bones. And I found literally a sliver of a femur.
Because if you remember, and he then pulverized
it. And then a sliver of a scapula. Yeah. I'm going to be like, fuck this. I got to find 600 fucking fragments of bone.
Hundreds.
Oh, I would have pissed off.
In the woodland area behind the Bath, Ohio address, where he had confessed to killing his first victim, formally identified 2 molars and vertebra with x-rays that were records of his.
Realistically, you only need a set of teeth.
Right, and they found 2, so. Mm. 3 days later, Dahmer was charged by authorities in Ohio with Hicks' murder. Dahmer was not charged with the attempted murder of Edwards, nor with the murder of Tuomi. He was not charged with Tuomi's murder because the Milwaukee County District Attorney only brought charges where murder could be proven beyond a reasonable doubt, and Dahmer had no memory of actually committing this particular murder, for which no physical evidence of the crime existed because he had so successfully gotten rid of the body.
So he got away with that one.
He got away with that one. Even though he admitted to, he's like, I mean, I did it. I just don't remember.
Right. I was wondering if he was convicted of all of his murders.
Ultimately, he pleaded guilty, but insane, to 15 counts of murder. He killed 17. Dahmer's trial began on January 30th of 92. He was tried in Milwaukee for 15 counts of first-degree murder. That's a lot. before Judge Lawrence Graham. By pleading guilty on January 13th to the charges brought against him, Dahmer had waived his rights to an initial trial to establish guilt, as defined in Wisconsin law and I think most laws. The issue debated by opposing counsels at Dahmer's trial was to determine whether he suffered from mental or personality disorders, something we kind of talked about in the last episode. The prosecution, claiming that any disorder did not deprive Dahmer of the ability to appreciate the criminality of his conduct or to deprive him of the ability to resist his impulses. The defense then argued that Dahmer suffered from a mental disease and was driven by obsessions and impulses, which he was unable to control. Which, I agree, he was unable to control his impulses, but by claiming insanity, it means that you are not in a state of mind to understand that what you're doing is wrong. And he absolutely knew it was wrong.
Yeah.
And he did it anyway. So I understand the compulsion, but if you know something is wrong, you are of enough of a mind to potentially not do it.
Yeah.
So it's not full insanity. Defense experts argued, though, that Dahmer was insane due to his necrophilic drive, his compulsion to have sexual encounters with corpses. Defense expert Dr. Fred Berlin testified that Dahmer was unable to conform his conduct at the time that he committed the crimes because he was suffering from a paraphilia, or more specifically, necrophilia.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Judith Becker, a professor of psychiatry, was the second expert witness for the defense. She also diagnosed Dahmer with necrophilia. The final defense expert to testify was a forensic psychiatrist, which is like my dream job. Dr. Carl Wallstrom diagnosed Dahmer with necrophilia, borderline personality disorder, schizotypal personality disorder, alcohol dependency, and psychotic disorder. So he was scary. And I would not have wanted to be in Jeffrey Dahmer's mind at any point in his waking life.
Yeah.
Even as a child. Because I'm sure he was probably like this as a child. The prosecution said, fuck that. He had a fucking altar planned. Said that Dahmer was not insane. Forensic psychiatrist Dr. Philip Resnick testified that Dahmer did not suffer from primary necrophilia because he preferred live sexual partners, as evidenced by his efforts to create unresistant submissive sexual zombies with the acid in the water.
At what point, like, I understand, like, yes, he understands it's wrong, so he's not criminally insane. But at the same time, it's like, but he's okay with doing all of this. Like, yes.
So he is insane.
Right. So yes, he knows, like, okay, by the book, this isn't okay. But mm-hmm. he's okay with doing it. And he obviously doesn't feel that guilty.
Right. I think it gets really muddied up when people play the insanity card. And I think the reason they try to fight it, even though he obviously was out of his mind, is because they don't want him to go into a rehabilitation program and be potentially released.
Right, yeah.
So, it makes sense. But yeah, you're absolutely right. He was crazy. Mm-hmm. Out of his mind crazy. Oh, another prosecution expert to testify, Dr. Fred Fosdell, testified that Dahmer was without mental disease or defect at the time that he committed the murders. He described Dahmer as a calculating and cunning individual who was able to differentiate between right and wrong, with the ability to control his actions. Although Fosdell did state his belief that Dahmer suffered from paraphilia, his conclusion was that Dahmer was not a sadist, which I agree with this statement, because it's, like I said earlier, it wasn't the killing that got him off.
Right.
It was the immobile body. Mm-hmm. No matter how that came about, the immobile body is what did it for him, not the harm that came to the people.
And that is on legal kink shaming. Like...
Sorry, if your kink is
it
to
doesn't.
Cut
we
body
actually
up.
Like. We know you killed people, and we know you liked it, but your persecution is going to ride on what actually got you off.
Exactly. Sorry about that, but in this case, I'm 100% for the kink shaming because it resulted in the murder of 17 men.
Yes, I was totally joking.
Yes. No, I just wanted to clarify for some of the people that maybe don't know.
No, I totally get it.
That we're joking. Da da da. The final witness to appear for the prosecution side was another forensic psychiatrist, Park Dietz. That's a nice name. He began his testimony on February 12th. He testified that he did not believe Dahmer was suffering from any mental illness or defect at the time that he committed the crime, stating that Dahmer went to great lengths to be alone with his victims and to have no witnesses. He explained that there was ample evidence that Dahmer prepared in advance for each murder, which he did. He had a routine and a ritual. Therefore, his crimes were not impulsive. Although Dietz did concede any acquisition of a paraphilia was not a matter of personal choice, he also stated that his belief that Dahmer's habit of becoming intoxicated prior to committing the murders was significant, saying that if he had the compulsion to kill, he would not have to drink alcohol. If he had to drink alcohol to overcome his inhibition to do the crime, which he would rather not do. Which leads me to believe that I get why Dahmer said, I don't actually like killing people.
Right. Mm-hmm. But the whole thing with alcohol is, like, people who are like, oh, I did it because I was drunk, like, cheating or
right.
being
and
mean.
He,
or...
Here's the thing. Dahmer has been drinking since he was, like, 14.
Right. And the whole, like, oh, I just did it because I'm drunk. Alcohol does not change your morals.
No.
It only changes your willingness to do them.
Exactly.
So.
He was like this without the drink.
Yeah.
Dietz also noted that Dahmer strongly identified with evil and corrupt characters from both the Exorcist 3 and Return of the Jedi, particularly the level of power held by these characters, expounding on the significance of these movies on Dahmer's psyche. Many of the murders committed at the Oxford apartments were also affected by this. Like I said earlier, they were playing for every single murder that he did. Dietz says that Dahmer occasionally viewed scenes from these films before searching for a victim, so it was like his pregame. He would watch the movie and then go out and find who he was going to kill. Dietz diagnosed Dahmer with substance abuse disorder, paraphilia, and schizotypal personality disorder. Two court-appointed mental health professionals testified independently of either prosecution or defense. They were forensic psychiatrist George Palermo and clinical psychologist Samuel Friedman. Palermo stated that the murders were a result of pent-up aggression with himself, which is what I said about the Tuomi murder.
Mm-hmm.
He killed those men because he wanted to kill the source of his homosexual attraction to them. In killing them, he killed what he hated in himself. I agree with some of that, but not all of it. I don't think Dahmer cared that he was gay.
No.
He accepted that very early on in his life, and I don't think that was something that made him upset.
But there could have been some internalized homophobia.
Maybe, because it was not accepted, and right. I mean, he knew that. I don't think his father even knew while he was alive. Palermo concluded that Dahmer was a sexual sadist with antisocial personality disorder, but was legally sane. Friedman testified, this is the other one, that it was a longing for companionship that caused Dahmer to kill. He stated, Mr. Dahmer is not psychotic. He spoke kindly of Dahmer, describing him as amiable, pleasant to be with, courteous with a sense of humor, conventionally handsome, which he was very good looking when he was younger, and charming in manner. He was and still is a bright young man. He diagnosed Dahmer with personality disorder, not otherwise specified, featuring borderline, obsessive, compulsive, and sadistic traits. So that was a lot, but I wanted to give you guys a perspective on health professionals, because obviously I'm not one, but I like to put my input in on it. The trial lasted a total of 2 weeks, and on February 14th, both counsels delivered their closing arguments. Each counsel was allowed to speak for 2 hours, so defense attorney Gerald Boyle argued first, repeatedly saying the testimony of mental health professionals, almost all of whom had agreed Dahmer was suffering from a mental disease. Boyle argued that Dahmer's compulsive killings had been a result of a sickness he discovered, not chose. Boyle portrayed Dahmer as a desperately lonely and profoundly sick individual, so out of control he could not conform his conduct anymore. Following the defense's argument, 75 minutes in total, Michael McCann delivered the closing argument for the prosecution. He described Dahmer as a sane man, in full control of his actions, who simply strove to avoid detection. McCann argued that the act of murder was committed in hostility, anger, resentment, frustration, or hatred, and that the victims for whose murder he was tried died merely to afford Dahmer a period of sexual pleasure. McCann further argued that by pleading guilty but insane to the charges, Dahmer was seeking to escape responsibility for his crimes. On the 15th of February, the court reconvened to hear the verdict. Dahmer was ruled to be sane and not suffering from a mental disorder at the time of each of the 15 murders for which he was tried, although in each count, two of the 12 jurors signified their dissent. On the first two counts, Dahmer was sentenced to life imprisonment plus 10 years. The remaining 13 counts carry a mandatory sentence of life imprisonment plus 70 years. The death penalty was not an option for Judge Graham to consider at the penalty phase, as Wisconsin had abolished capital punishment in 1853. However, had he been tried in Ohio, I can almost guarantee he would have been given the death penalty.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Upon hearing of Dahmer sentencing, his father Lionel and stepmother Sherry requested to be allowed a 10-minute little meeting with him before he was transferred to the Columbia Correctional Institution in Portage to begin his sentence. The request was granted, and they exchanged hugs and well wishes before Dahmer was escorted away. 3 months after his conviction in Milwaukee, Dahmer was extradited to Ohio to be tried for the murder of Stephen Hicks. In a court hearing lasting just about 45 minutes, he had again pleaded guilty, so he didn't need like the whole big jury. He was sentenced to a 16th term of life imprisonment on May 1st, 1992. After his sentencing, he was transferred to the Columbia Correctional Institution, and for the first year of his incarceration, he was placed in solitary confinement due to the concerns for his physical safety should he come into contact with fellow inmates. You'll see why. With Dahmer's consent, after 1 year in solitary confinement, he was transferred to a less secure unit where he was assigned a 2-hour daily work detail cleaning the toilet block. Shortly after completing his lengthy confession in 91, he requested Detective Murphy that he be given a copy of the Bible. This request was granted, and Dahmer gradually devoted himself to Christianity and became a born-again Christian. On his father's urging, he also read creationist books from the Institution for Creation Research. And in May of 94, Dahmer was baptized by Roy Ratcliffe, a minister in the Church of Christ and a graduate of Oklahoma Christian University, in the prison whirlpool. I added this because it's kind of important, because I think a lot of people will say he only did that so he could feel good about himself in the end, which you're probably right. But Dahmer was raised in a Christian environment. His parents were Christian. His grandmother was Christian, and she took him to church. So it wasn't like this was a totally new concept to him. Mm-hmm. He believed in evil, good and evil. So I could see him associating his life with having the possibility penal of something like hell. So I could see him doing this in a last-ditch effort to save himself. Yeah.
And all sins are seen as equal in the eyes of God.
Exactly. So,
But that's actually surprising, because I was like, he so far has not shown any kind of fear in the possible moral afterlife.
I think a lot of it came from his father. I watched an interview with him in that Dahmer on Dahmer where Lionel actually spoke, and Sherry, his stepmother, spoke, and they said, you know, we feared for his soul, and we don't anymore. We think he did what he needed to do, and he's fine now. So I think maybe, even if he didn't do it for himself, I think he may have done it for his parents, because I think he loved his father.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he obviously loved his grandma, so.
Oh, yeah. And I didn't catch anything about whether she was alive at this point, but I don't think she was alive by the time he was imprisoned. But she may have been. I'm not 100% sure. In July of 94, a fellow inmate, Osvaldo Durufi, attempted to slash Dahmer's throat with a razor embedded in a toothbrush as Dahmer returned to his cell from Ratcliffe's weekly church service conducted in the chapel. Dahmer received superficial wounds, and he wasn't really hurt by the incident. But according to Dahmer's family, he had long been ready to die and accepted any punishment which he might endure in prison, which is what you said earlier, that he didn't care. In addition to his father and stepmother maintaining regular contact, Dahmer's mother, Joyce, also maintained regular contact with her son, although prior to the arrest, the two had not seen each other since Christmas of 1983. Joyce related that in her weekly phone calls, whenever she expressed concern for Dahmer's physical well-being, Dahmer responded with comments basically to the effect of, "It doesn't matter, Mom. I don't care if something happens to me." On the morning of November 28th of 1994, Dahmer left his cell to conduct his work detail. Accompanying him were two fellow inmates, Jesse Anderson and Christopher Scarver. The trio were left unsupervised in the showers of the prison gym for about 20 minutes. At approximately 8:10 in the morning, Dahmer was discovered on the floor of the bathrooms of the gym, suffering from extreme head and facial wounds. He had been severely bludgeoned at the head and face with a 20-inch metal bar. His head had also been repeatedly struck against the wall in the assault. Although Dahmer was still alive and was rushed to a nearby hospital, he was pronounced dead 1 hour later. Anderson had also been beaten with the same instrument and died 2 days later from his wounds. Scarver, who was serving a life sentence for a murder committed in 1990, informed authorities that he had first attacked Dahmer with the metal bar as he was cleaning a staff locker room before attacking Anderson as he cleaned an inmate locker room. According to Scarver, Dahmer did not yell or make any noise as he was attacked, and immediately after attacking both men, Scarver, who was thought to be schizophrenic, returned to his cell and informed a prison guard, "God told me to do it. Jesse Anderson and Jeffrey Dahmer are dead." Scarver was adamant that he had not planned the attacks in advance, although he later divulged to the investigators that he had concealed the 20-inch iron bar used to kill both men in his clothing shortly before the killings. After learning of his death, Dahmer's mother Joyce responded angrily to the media, "Now is everybody happy? Now that he's bludgeoned to death, is that good enough for everyone?" The response of the families of Dahmer's victims was mixed, although it appears most were pleased with his death. The district attorney who prosecuted Dahmer cautioned against turning Scarver into a folk hero, noting that Dahmer's death was still murder, and on May 15th of 1995, Scarver was sentenced to 2 additional terms of life for the murders of Dahmer and Anderson. Although Scarver confessed in 91 to concealing that bar that killed Dahmer and Anderson, in 2015 he publicly stated the murders of Dahmer and Anderson had resulted from a confrontation in which one of the two men had poked him. Scarver, yeah.
Poked him.
In the back as the three had begun their assigned work detail. In this renewed account of events, Scarver claimed that the two had laughed at him when he had turned around in response before Dahmer and Anderson each walked into separate rooms to begin their cleaning duty, with Scarver following Dahmer towards the staff locker room. Scarver alleges that right before murdering Dahmer, he had cornered him, pressed a newspaper article detailing Dahmer's crimes, and demanded that Dahmer answer whether the account was true. Scarver further alleged that he had been revolted by Dahmer's crimes and that Dahmer had been openly unrepentant. The Dahmer taunted prison employees and fellow inmates by sharpening his prison food into imitations of severed limbs, complete with ketchup to simulate blood spatter, and that prison staff, knowing of Scarver's hatred for Dahmer, had deliberately left the two men unsupervised so that he could kill him. Furthermore, Scarver stated that Dahmer was so disliked by the other inmates that he required a personal escort of at least one guard whenever he was out of his cell to prevent inmates from attacking him. Dahmer had stated in his will that he wished for no services to be conducted and that he wished to be cremated. In September of 95, his body was cremated and his ashes divided between his parents.
A Okay, first of all, talk about some unconditional love.
Yeah.
She was like, are you happy now he was beat up? Excuse me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, consider how she treated him his whole life. She didn't love him properly.
No, but, you know, I mean, there's some props to give for her, like, continuing that relationship even after that. Maybe she felt guilty, like,
maybe
he turned out this way because of me. But definitely, 100%, if he was like, I want to have a guard with me at all times when I'm out of my cell.
Mm-hmm.
Those guards left them alone for a reason.
Yeah, I believe this updated encounter, the one from 2015, that it was kind of an inside job. That's very believable to me. I don't see anybody liking Jeffrey Dahmer. I don't see anybody wanting to protect Jeffrey Dahmer.
And also, like, rapists of any kind
don't do well in prison.
No.
And he was more than a rapist. He was a pedophile.
Yeah.
Like he,
pedophiles too.
Yeah. He had assaulted children many times and had killed one. Pretty terrible. Right.
I didn't know he ever killed anybody that young.
Yeah. I think if he had been more successful and less crazy, he would have done more younger ones.
Yeah. Straight children.
Because if you look at the ages of all the rest, they were usually really early 20s.
Yeah.
Very young. So his estate was awarded to the families of his 11 of his victims who had sued for damages in 96. That was when I was born. Thomas Jacobson, a lawyer that represented 8 of the families, announced a planned auction of Dahmer's estate. Although the victim's relatives stated that the motivation was not greed, the announcement sparked controversy. A civic group in Milwaukee, Civic Pride, was quickly established in the effort to raise funds to purchase and destroy Dahmer's possessions. The group pledged, including a $100,000 gift by Milwaukee real estate developer Joseph Zilber for purchase of Dahmer's estate. 5 of the 8 families represented Jacobson to agree to the terms, and Dahmer's possessions were subsequently destroyed and buried in an undisclosed Illinois landfill. So they really did not like him.
Oh, yeah.
Rightfully so. There's actually, I might try to put the audio in here if I can find it. It, like, oh, it hurts me. You know how they give victims' families the ability to speak at the trial if they want to? One of the victim's sisters, I can't remember which one, she's addressing Dahmer about what he did to her brother. And she, like, stands up and screams at him and is crying, saying, I hate you, Jeffrey. I hate you. I fucking hate you. And it's the most raw, emotional thing I've ever heard. On August 5th of 91, a candlelit vigil to celebrate and heal the Milwaukee community had an attendance of more than 400 people. Present at the vigil were community leaders, gay rights activists, and family members of several of Dahmer's victims. Organizers stated that the purpose of the vigil was to enable Milwaukeeans to share their feelings of pain and anger over what had happened. The Oxford apartment at 924 North Street, or North 25th Street, where Dahmer had killed 12 of his victims, were demolished in November of 92. The site is now a vacant lot. Alternate plans to turn it into a memorial garden or a playground to reconstruct new housing have failed to materialize.
Well, fuck yeah.
Sorry. A memorial garden I could see. Like, that makes sense to me. A playground?
Yeah. Like,
that's literally a bit insensitive. Like,
he enjoyed children and you're going to build a playground?
Very insensitive. Even if he had enjoyed children, that's no. Like,
right.
Lionel Dahmer is retired now and he lives with his second wife, Sherry. They refused to change their surname and have professed their love of Dahmer despite his crimes. In 94, Lionel published a book, which I have read excerpts from, and I want to read the whole book. It's called A Father's Story. He donated a portion of the proceeds from his book to the victims' families. Most of the families showed support for Lionel and Sherry, although 3 families subsequently sued Lionel, 2 for using their names in the book without obtaining prior consent, and a 3rd family, that of Stephen Hicks, filing a wrongful death suit against Lionel, Sherry, and former wife Joyce, citing parental negligence as the cause for their claim, which there's some ground to that because he was living in the family home at 18 alone. Joyce Flint, his mother, died of cancer in November of 2000. Prior to her death, she had attempted suicide on at least 1 occasion. Dahmer's younger brother, David, changed his surname and lives in anonymity. And that is the story of Jeffrey Dahmer.
Ugh, woof.
Yeah.
There's a lot I didn't know.
Yeah. I probably missed, like, some of the minute details.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's so much. Yeah. There's so much about him.
I'm going to say, though, I like the little bit we have where anytime the year of our birth is stated. We immediately go, that's the year I was born.
I just don't want anyone to forget.
It's funny.
Jeffrey Dahmer, like me, is a Gemini. Mm. But he's a May Gemini, so it's a little bit different.
Mm. I'm Taurus, so. Yeah. If anybody was intrigued by the fact that Dahmer doesn't remember killing that second victim,
yeah,
you need to watch Alias Grace.
Ooh,
I remember like that. Alias as in A-L-A-I-S,
okay.
Grace. It's about a young girl, she's like 13, who comes over from Ireland during like the potato famine. Mm-hmm. To Canada. So it's like, she's got all of her, like her abusive father, her okay mother, and like all of her siblings. And she goes, you know, it's basically like her struggle of like growing up in that environment.
Mm-hmm.
And there comes a point, like it starts off where she's in prison. And this is like right when mental illness, like, started to be like
noticed
mm-hmm. and like recognized in the medical field.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a doctor, a psychologist who
those air quotes, I love right, it.
She's in prison and these people like are like, you know, we want to know if she really did it or not. I guess she killed some people, but she doesn't remember if she did it or not. So mm-hmm. she's been in prison for like 10 years. She's like maybe in her early 20s. So she did all this when she was like 16.
Rough go of it.
And it's basically like him talking her through her whole life to see like where the discrepancy is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a very short series. Each episode's like 40 minutes long. It's like maybe 10 episodes.
That sounds very interesting.
I've watched it like 3 times. Like wow. It's so good.
And I wish, like, part of me, like, don't get me wrong, I'm happy Jeffrey Dahmer died, and I like the way he ended up dying, but I kind of wish he hadn't, at least not right away, because I think it would have been very interesting and helpful if people had been able to study him and to find out what... I don't know if it would have prevented anything, but I think that anything, especially like this, helps the medical field dissect mental health even more.
I know there's like... With how long he got away with it, I know there's like some anticlimacticness of him going to jail and getting almost instantly killed.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't serve much time.
But at the same time, like, there's really... He was very honest. He's like, I did it for this reason. I know I'm guilty. And that's what happened. And he didn't really feel bad for it.
Right.
There's only so much depth to that.
Exactly.
And he deserved to die.
Yeah.
Even sooner than the way he did, in my opinion. So...
Yep. I don't care if you're anti-death penalty. Sorry. You're allowed to be, but... Jeffrey Dahmer didn't deserve to have air in his lungs after the things he did to other people. Sorry. He just didn't.
Yeah. And, I mean, I know we're like, oh, yes, we're the super sophisticated society. Everyone.
We don't take eye for an eye. I'm sorry.
Whatever. No, it's going to happen one way or another. And, yes, while Milwaukee probably was like, oh, we don't do death penalty.
If they had had that available to them, they would have given it to him.
Yeah, and the guards there knew that. They knew he deserved to die, and they were like, yeah, you take care of it. The inmates would take care of it, and they let it happen.
Yeah.
Because they knew that that's what should have happened.
What I would be interested to know, and maybe some of those psychologists had talked about it, do they think he would have done it again? If he had been put through a correctional... you know, program, had been declared insane and then released again, you know, however many years, maybe he was much older, would he have done it again? Yeah. I think he would have.
He would have raped people in the mental hospital and he would have, he would have done it again.
Yeah. I bet you he probably tried to do something to people in prison.
Yeah.
But because he was so hated, it was unsuccessful for him. I mean, he did it in the military. Prison's different, but right. I mean.
No, for sure.
Yeah. So.
And I commend inmates for like, yeah, I killed a guy over drugs or yeah, whatever. But if you are a pedophile or you killed innocent people, you're dead.
Yeah.
And that's
the
vigilante justice system we have right now. So yeah.
I mean, if it works, it works.
Yeah.
So there you go. There you have it. I'm really tired. 35 pages. I feel like it's my life's work, but it's not. Oh, that was a lot, but
it was.
I think it's an important story. I think they're all important stories. I'll have a kind of a fun little one later in the month that I think Amanda will really enjoy. That's a small story that leads to a bigger issue, and that's what it's all about. So these are all pointing to much bigger problems.
Mm-hmm. We could talk about Dahmer forever.
Yep. But... so we'll just end it here.
Yep.
You can talk to us about Dahmer at crimeandthecoconut@gmail.com, or you can find us on Instagram at crimeandthecoconut, or Twitter at CITC Podcasts. Go berate the CITC Podcast Twitter. Tell them to shut it down.
Yeah, give us our fucking tag name.
I need it. So yeah, that's it. We're on all major platforms. If we're not on something you prefer to listen to, let us know. If you listen to us on something that allows you to leave rates and reviews, do it. Please. And that's it. I'll probably put some of Jeffrey's voice at the end of this for you to listen to.
Okay, take it away, Jeff.
To this day, I don't know what started it. And the person to blame is sitting right across from you. That's the only person.